John Lennon, The Rolling Stone Interview, Part 3.
How would you characterize John and Paul and John and Ringo, George, Paul and Ringo's reaction to Yoko?
It's the same. You can quote Paul. You can look it in the papers. He said many times that at first he hated Yoko, and then he got to like her. It's too late for me, you know, and for Yoko, you know. Why should she take that kind of shit from those people? You know, they're writing about her looking miserable in Let It Be. You sit through 60 sessions with the most big-headed, uptight people on earth and see what it's fucking like and be insulted by it just because you love someone. That's... And George was insulted her right to her face in Apple office at the beginning, just being straightforward. You know, that game of, well, I'm going to be upfront because this is what I've heard, and Dylan and a few people said you've got a lousy name in New York, and you give off bad vibes. That's what George said to her, and we both sat through it, and I didn't hit him, I don't know why. But I was always hoping that they'd come round. I couldn't believe it, you know. And they all sat there with their wives like a fucking jury and judged us. And the only thing I did was write that piece about some of our beast friends, and in my usual way, because I was never honest. I always had to write it in that gobbledygook. And that's what they did to us. Ringo was all right, so was Maureen. Mm. But the other two really gave it to us. You know, I never forgive them. You know, I don't care what fucking shit about Hare Krishna and God and Paul about, well, I've changed my mind, you know. I don't forgive him for that.
Some people said that with Paul's album, it came out, you know, bathing on the cover, said that was done as a deliberate, you know, insult to you and Yoko because you couldn't have a date.
No, I don't think he did that. I think he was just imitating us, as they usually do, by putting out a family album, you know. They do exactly what I do a year or two later. This is going to be some fucking thing. I don't, you know, it's the end of it. They're imitators, you know.
What do you think people will do with this new album, you know?
Mine?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of imitating and coming along later.
Well, I've no idea, you know.
Steven Stills or George Bass guitar player coming out with his statement.
I do believe that's what will happen, you know. But we'll see. I don't know.
It's a fantastic, strong album, you know. So one way or other, people are going to love it.
I personally will probably come out with Wop Wop Aluma or something. You know, I mean, I've said it for a
you
bit.
You said it enough for 10 years, actually.
Yeah.
When did you realize that you're just not going to be unable to reconcile Paul, George, to Yoko?
I don't know when it was, when I decided to leave the group, you know. Yeah, I mean, I wanted, Yoko played me a tape sound of sort of work. I know it was very strange, and avant-garde music is a tough thing to assimilate and all that. But I've heard the Beatles playing avant-garde music when nobody's looking for years, you know. But they're artists, and all artists have fucking big egos, whether they'd like to admit it or not. And when a new artist came into the group, that was never allowed. Now, sometimes George and I would like to bring somebody in like Billy Preston. That was acceptable. We would have had him in the group, you know. We were fed up with the same old shit. But it wasn't wanted, and I would have expanded the Beatles, broken the myth, and get their pants off, you know, stop being God. But it didn't work. It didn't work. And Yoko was naive. She came in and would expect to perform with them like you would with any group. She was jamming, you know. But there'd be a sort of coldness about it. So. I mean, when I decided to leave the group, that's when I decided, you know, that I could no longer artistically get anything out of the Beatles, and here was somebody that could turn me on to a million things.
How did you choose the musician for your money?
I'm a very nervous person, really. I'm not as big headed as this tape sounds, you know. This is me projecting through the fear, you know. But so I choose people that I know, rather than strangers, you know.
Like you'd bring them.
Yeah.
Why do you get along with them?
Because in spite of all the things, the Beatles really could play music together when they weren't uptight. And if I get a thing going, Ringo knows where to go, you know, like that. And he does what we've played together so long that it fits, you know. I mean, that's the only thing I sometimes miss is being able to just sort of blink or make a certain noise, and I know they'll all know where we're going on an ad lib thing. But it's I don't miss it that much, you know.
You always said that, you know, for the Beatles, you wanted the Beatles wanted to be bigger than Elvis.
Yeah.
Why?
Because Elvis was the biggest. We wanted to be the biggest, you know. Doesn't everybody, you know.
When did you decide that?
Well, first of all, we wanted to, say, Paul and I wanted to be the Goffin and King of England. This was an old story, you know. Because Goffin and King were writing this great stuff at that time. And then we decided, well, we're better than them, so we want to be this, you know, we want to be the world. It's just like, we want to be this, we want to be the next thing, you know, we want to be president or whatever. It goes on and on and on. But we always wanted to be bigger than Elvis, because Elvis was the thing. Whatever we say, he was it.
At what moment did you realize then you were bigger than Elvis?
I don't know. I don't know, you know. See, it's different when it happens, you've forgotten about it. It's like, you know, when you actually get... the number one or whatever it is, it's different. It's the going for it which is the fun.
And then at some point you just never thought about it again?
Yeah, we were just like jelly. We set in a mold and we floated about like that.
Part of the dream was the Beatles of God. And the Beatles is the messenger of God. And the Beatles is being God, or yourself is being God.
Yeah, I mean, if there is a God, we're all it. Yeah.
Right. But, I mean, what I'm trying to think of is, when did you first start getting reactions from people who would listen to the record, the first sort of spiritual reactions, people?
This record? No, the Beatles. There's a guy in England called William Mann, who writes in the Times, that wrote the first intellectual review of the Beatles, which got people talking about us in that intellectual way.
As a musician?
Yeah, he wrote about Aeolian cadences and all sort of musical terms. And he's a bullshitter, you know. But he made us... He wrote about Paul's album as if it was written by Beethoven, this last one. He's just voted it Album of the Year and all that shit, you know. And he's written this... He's still writing the same shit, you know. But it did us a lot of good in that way, because people, all the middle classes and intellectuals, are going, ooh, you know, aren't they clever?
Sort of message thing,
the message thing? About love and that.
Well, that, when did first somebody come up to you with the John and his God?
No, I don't.
Direction.
What to do and all that. You know, like, you tell us guru, that bit. Probably after acid. Well, I don't know, rubber soul. I can't quite remember, you know. I can't remember it exactly happening, you know. We just took that position, you know. I mean, we started putting out messages, you know. Like the word, and the word is love, and things like that. And I like messages, you know. I mean.
How strawberry feels for me.
No, that's later on. This is earlier on. Okay. So, yeah.
See,
when you start putting out messages, people start coming asking you, what's the message?
How did you first get involved with LSD?
A dentist in London
dentist.
Laid it on George, me, and our wives without telling us at a dinner party at his house. He was a friend of George's and our dentist at the time. And he just put it in our coffee or something, you know. And we went... He was saying, I advise you not to go. He didn't know what it was. It was just a sort of, you know, it's all the thing, you know, with the sort of the middle class London swingers or whatever had all heard about it, and they didn't know it was different from pot or pills. And they gave us it, and he was saying, I advise you not to leave. And we thought he was all trying to keep us for an orgy in his house, and we didn't want to know, you know. And we went out to the ad lib and these discotheques, and it was incredible things going on. And that's how it happened.
That was around his table, and then
No, I mean, this was at dinner, and we got out and went, and this guy came with us. He was nervous. He didn't know what we were going crackers, you know. I mean, it was insane going around London on it, and we thought, when we went to the club, we thought it was on fire, and then we thought it was a premiere. Oh, no, we thought it was a premiere. It was just an ordinary light outside. We thought, shit, what's going on here, you know? And we were cackling in the street, and then, you know, people were shouting, let's break a window. You know, we were just insane. I mean, we just had our heads, and people had come up to me. We got in the lift, and we all thought there was a fire in the lift. It was just a little red light, and we were all screaming like that, and it erupted, all hysterical. And we all arrived on the floor, because this was a discotheque that was up a building, you know. And the lift stops, and the door opens, and we all go, ah! And we just see that it's the club, and then we walk in, you know, sit down, and it's like that. You know, and the table's elongating. I think we went to eat before that, and it was like in the thing I'd read about opium, where the table I suddenly realised that it was only a table like this with four of us, right, but it went this long. Just like I'd read somebody, Blake, is it? Somebody describing the effects of the opium in the old days. And I thought, fucking, it's happening, you know. And then we went to the ad lib and all that, and then some singer came up to me and said, can I sit next to you? And I was going, only if you don't talk! You know, like, because I just couldn't think.
When you came down, what did you think?
I was pretty stunned, you know, for a month or two.
Well, where did you go after that?
Well, it seemed to go on all night. I can't remember the details. It just went on like that. And then George, somehow or another, managed to drive us home in his Mini, but we were going about 10 miles an hour. It seemed like 1,000. And Patty was saying, let's jump out and play football. You know, there's these big rugby poles and things like that. And I was getting all this sort of hysterical jokes coming out, like a speed, because I was always on that too. You know, and George was going, don't make me laugh! And, you know, God, it was just terrifying. You know? But it was fantastic. I did some drawings at the time. I've got them somewhere, like, four faces saying, we all agree with you, you know, and all things like that. I gave them to Ringo, lost the originals. I did a lot of drawing that night, just like that. And then George's house seemed to be, you know, just like a big submarine. I was driving it. They all went to bed. I was carrying on my own. It seemed to float above his wall, which was 18 foot. You know, I was right driving them. And the second time we had it in L.A., which is different.
What happened then?
Well, then we took it deliberately.
Everybody slept.
I don't remember. I don't remember, you know. It was just...
Everybody get up.
Then later, I can't remember, you know, we're all just a bit down, you know, a bit, wow, you know, I don't remember that kind of thing. I remember the highlights, you know. And then, well, we just decided to take it again in California, yeah. We were on tour in one of those houses, like, you know, Doris Day's house or whatever it was we used to stay. And the three of us took it, Ringo, George and I think maybe Neil, and a couple of the birds, you know, that, what's his name, the one in the Steels and Nash thing. You know the birds?
Yeah,
BYRD? Crosby and the other guy who used to be the leader.
McGuinn.
I think they came around. I'm not sure. On a few trips. Like that. But there was some English reporters that was like Don Short. And we were in the garden. It was only the second one. We still didn't know anything about do it in a nice place and cool it and all that. We just took it, you know. And then we suddenly saw the reporter. And we're thinking, how do we act normally? Because we imagined we were acting extraordinary, which we weren't. He thought, surely somebody can see, you know. We were terrified, waiting for him to go, and he wondered why he couldn't come over. And Neil, who had never had it either, had taken it, and he still had to play road manager. We said, go and get rid of Don Short, and he didn't know what to do. He just sort of sat with him. And Peter Fonda came, and that was another thing. And he kept on saying, I know what it's like to be dead. And he said, what? Mm-hmm. And he kept saying it, you know. We were saying, for Christ's sake, shut up, we don't care. You know, we don't want to know. And he kept going on about it. And that's how I wrote, she said, I know what it's like to be dead.
What else entered into that song?
She said.
Yeah.
I know what it is. Well, it was a sad song, you know. Mm-hmm. That was just an acid-y song, I suppose. And when I was a little boy, you see. A lot of, you know, early childhood was coming out anyway.
So how long did LSD go on?
It went on for years. I must have had 1,000 trips, you know.
Literally 1,000?
Oh, yeah.
1,000.
No, lots, you know. I used to just eat it all the time.
Through what album?
I don't know. I never took it in the studio. Once I did accidentally, I thought it was taking some uppers. Mm-hmm. And I was not in the state of handling it, you know.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what album it was, but I took it, and then I just noticed I suddenly got so scared on the mic, you know. I said, what was it? You know, I said, I feel ill. I thought I felt ill. And And it was going, I thought it was going cracked, you know, and then I said, I must get some air, and they all took me upstairs on the roof, and George Martin was looking at me funny, you know. And then it dawned on me, I must have taken acid. And I said, well, I can't go, I'll have to go. So I just said, you'll have to do it, and I'll just stay and watch. And I was just, you know, like very nervous and just watching them all. Said, is it all right? And they were saying, yeah, you know, all being very kind. And I said, yes, it's all right. And I said, are you sure it's all right? And I said, all right, you know, and they carried on making a record.
The other Beatles didn't get into the relative as much as you did.
George's pretty in LA. Paul felt very out of it because we were all a bit slightly cruel, you know. So we're taking it in your arm, but we kept seeing him, you know, and we'd be going up to, and we couldn't eat our food, you know. I just couldn't manage it. We'd be picking it up with the hands, and we're fucking them. There's all these people sort of serving us in the house and that, and we're just sort of knocking it on the floor and then oh like that. And it was a long time before Paul took, and then there was the big announcement. You know. So I don't know. I think George is pretty heavy. We're probably both the most cracked, you know. I think Paul's a bit more stable than George and I. Yeah. I don't know about straight, stable. I think LSD profoundly shocked him.
Did you ever play into bad trips?
Oh yeah, I had many. Jesus Christ! You know, I stopped taking it because of that. You know, I mean, I just
couldn't stand it.
You know, and yeah, it got like that. But then I dropped it for I don't know how long. Then I started taking it just before I met Yoko again. Derek came over and see, I got a message on acid that used to destroy your ego, and I did, you know. I was reading that stupid Book of Learys and all that shit, you know. We're going through all a whole game that everybody went through. And I destroyed myself, you know. And I was slowly putting myself together after Maharishi and that, bit by bit over a 2-year period. And then I destroyed my ego, you know, and I didn't believe I could do anything, you know. And I let Paul do what he wanted and say them all just do what they wanted. And I just was nothing, I was shit, you know. And and then Derek tripped me out at his house after he got back from LA. He said, it's all, you know, it's all, and he sort of said, you're all right, and he pointed out which songs I'd written, and, you know, he said, you wrote this, and you said this, and you are intelligent, don't be frightened, you know. And then next week, I went down with Yoko, and we tripped out again, and she filled me completely to realize that I was me, and it's all right, you know. And that was it, you know. And I started fighting again and being a loudmouth again and saying, well, I can do this and fuck you, you know, and this is what I want. You know, I want it, you know, and don't put me down, you know, I did this. So that's where I am now.
There's a lot of obvious things, you know, with the music.
Yes.
Where are some of the obvious things? I mean, if tomorrow never knows.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, how do you think that sort of affected your conception of music in general?
Well, it was only another mirror. It wasn't another miracle, you know. It was more of a visual thing and the therapy, you know, looking at that yourself bit than it. Well, it did all that, you know. I don't quite remember, you know, when you hear the music, but it didn't write the music, neither did Janov Maharishi in the same terms. I write the music. In the circumstances which I'm in, whether it's on acid or in the water, you know.
And in all those trips, you just didn't lose yourself that
much. What was the first... you'd say She Said would be like the first song that has some connected with an influential drug experience.
No, not really. There's nothing I can pinpoint. Because, I mean, like, Rubber Soul was pot. Right. Or the one before was with the white drawing. I don't remember. It was like... You know, like pills influenced in Hamburg... You know, and drink influenced this in so-and-so, and I don't know. There's no specific things. I only wrote because the guy said, I know what it's like to be dead. I thought that was, if I'd read it in the paper, I would have written a song about it. And to write a mood song, if I'm sad, I would just write sort of sad things. You know, just remember sad things. When I was a boy, everything was right and all that, which was a dream. But, you know, I would put myself in a sad mood and write a sad song. Or be in a sad mood and write a song is more like it.
Just to go to movies like Hard Day's Night.
Yeah.
What did you think when you saw Hard Day's Night?
Well, thought it wasn't bad, it could have been better. You see, there's another illusion that that we were just puppets, and that these great people like Brian Epstein and Dick Lester created this situation and made this whole fucking thing precisely because we were what we were, and realistic. We didn't want to make a fucking shitty pop movie. We didn't even want to make a movie that was going to be bad. And we insisted on having a real writer to write it. And Brian came up with Alan Owen from Liverpool, who'd written a play for TV called No Trams to Lime Street, which I knew, and I think Paul, maybe they all knew. No Trams to Lime Street. Lime Street's a famous street in Liverpool where the Hoos used to be in the old days. And he was famous for writing Liverpool dialogue. And we auditioned people to write for us, you know. And they came up with this guy, and we knew his work. And we said, all right, but then he had to come round with us to see what we were like. But he was a phony, you know. He was one like a professional Liverpool man, you know, like professional Americans like that. And he stayed with us 2 days and wrote the whole thing based on our characters. And that, me, witty, Ringo, dumb, cute, George, this. And I set the whole thing. And we were a bit infuriated by the glibness of it, you know, and the shittiness of the dialogue, you know. And we were always trying to get it more realistic, even with Dick and all that, and make the camera work more realistic, but they wouldn't have it, you know. But they made that movie, and so that's how it happened, and the next one was just bullshit.
Well, like Hard Day's Night now.
I just hate this illusion about George Martin, Brian Epstein, Dick Lester, and all these people making something out of us. We're the ones that are still creating.
My impression from the movie was that it was
a good projection of one facade of us, which was on tour in once in London and once in Dublin, of us in that situation together in a hotel having to perform before people. We were like that. He saw the press conferences and we were a little. He recreated it pretty well, but we thought it was phony then. Even, you know, it wasn't realistic enough.
Were you aware of the impact that Hard Day's Night had in the States? I mean, other than being tremendously popular.
I don't remember. All we knew was big hit or no hit, you know, if it was a big hit or not. I don't remember.
The Hard Day's Night was sort of the period when the Birds started.
Was it?
Well, all the American musicians.
Oh, I don't know.
They went and saw Hard Day's Night and realized rock and roll was okay.
I see. No, I wasn't ever aware of those impacts. I was aware of musical impacts, more listening to people. Oh, no, he got that from us, and we got that from us, all that kind of thing. I don't know. I can just tell where the groups came from. You know, any of them now, I can tell. You know, like Zeppelin and Fleetwood Mac, you can hear all this, where everything came from. Same as you can with anybody, you know.
So, after Harder, when did you first...
Are we still on?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I remember the single coming out, the Day Tripper, We Can Work It Out.
Yeah.
And somewhere
that was a drug song.
Day Tripper. Why?
Because it was a day tripper, you know. I just liked the word.
At some point, right in there between sort of Help and Hard Day's Night, you know, sort of got into drugs and got into doing drugs.
No, but in Hard Day's Night, I was on pills. That's drugs, you know, that's bigger drugs than pot. I've been on pills since I was 15, since I was 17, since I became a musician. The only way to survive in Hamburg, to play 8 hours a night, was to take pills. Like the waiters gave you the pills and drink. I was a fucking drop-down drunk in art school. I was a pill addict until Help, just before Help, where we were turned onto pot and we dropped drink. Simple as that. I've always needed a drug to survive. I can't, you know, and the others too, but I always had more, you know. I always took more pills and more of everything because I'm more crazy.
At Day Tripper, that time when you first started writing message songs, serious songs?
Probably after Dylan, I don't know. Day Tripper wasn't a serious message song.
I don't mean the serious message song in that sense. I mean, there was a big change in your music from you know, the Can't Buy Me Love to We Can Work It Out.
What was on the back side? I can't remember. You can't do that. Yeah, it was... Till what? To what?
To Rubber Soul. To starting to...
I suppose it was pot then, you know. I don't really know, you know. I can't even... We Can Work It Out was... I Paul wrote that chorus, you know, I wrote the middle bit of that. Life is very short and there's no time for fussing and fighting, all that bit. But I don't remember any changeover, other than when you take pot, you're a little more less aggressive than when you take alcohol. See, when you're alcohol and pills, you just, you know, it's just about anything, you know.
Well, all right, then that's to say, talking about Rubber Soul was it.
Was that, can you tell me if that white album with the drawing by Klaus Voormann on it, there's an album, was that before Rubber Soul or after? Oh, I see, okay, Rubber Soul is the one.
You really don't remember which?
No. Well, maybe the others do, you know. I don't remember those kind of things, because it doesn't mean anything. It's all gone.
Well, Rubber Soul was it seemed like the first attempt to be serious.
No, we're getting better technically and musically, that's all. I mean, we finally took over the studio. I mean, in the early days, we had to take what we were given, you know, and we had to make it in 2 hours or whatever it was, and 1-3 takes was enough, and we didn't know about you can get more bass and do it. We were learning the technique, and Rubber Soul, we were sort of more precise about making the album at all, and we took over the cover and everything. You know?
What was Rubber Soul? That was just a simple play on that.
Oh, that was Paul's title. I suppose. It was like Yeah Blues, I suppose. You know, meaning English soul. You know, Rubber Soul, I suppose. Just a pun. Nothing, there's no great mysterious meanings behind all of this. It was just four boys, you know, working out what to call a new album. I don't mind. No, we better go on, because Yoko's got your pal, Jonathan Cott, to do the same trip with next, how she formed the Beatles in 1929. And we like to be together, because it's nicer.
What happened? Why? I'm saving the psychological stuff for later.
Go on.
What did Derica and Brian have? Why did they fall?
Where did they what?
They had a good fight.
Oh, because Derek is another egomaniac, you know, who, and Brian was very hard to live with, you know, to take. He had a lot of tantrums and things like that. Like most fags do, you know, they're very insecure. And I think it just, something happened, which I don't remember, maybe Paul or somebody, but you'd have to ask them, you know. But something happened, they had many arguments, and Derek would walk off, because he was too proud to do certain jobs, and that's the same now, you know. And don't blame him, but don't get paid for it. So that's what happened, they had a big row, and Derek was hired by Brian, so was Peter Brown. You know. They really were not hired by us. Yes, all those. We hired Neil in Liverpool and Mal in Liverpool. Those are the only people we ever hired.
The Hunter Davies book has one.
It was bullshit, yeah.
The Hunter Davies book?
Well, it was really bullshit. You know, it was written in the sort of Sunday Times, you know, the Fab Four, and no truth was written. And my auntie knocked all the truth bits about my childhood and my mother out, and I allowed her, which is my cop out, etc., etc. There was nothing about the orgies and the shit that happened on tour and all that, and I wanted a real book to come out, but we all had wives and didn't want to hurt the feelings end of that one, because they still have. You know, I mean, the Beatles tours were like satirical. You know, I mean, we had that image, but man, our tours were like something else. If you could get on our tours, you were in, you know. They were satirical and all that. Yeah, Australia, what? Just everywhere. It's satirical. Just think of satirical, only with four musicians going through it.
Would you go to a town, a hotel?
Wherever we went, there was always a whole scene going. We had our four bedrooms separate from, tried to keep them out of our room, and Derek and Neil's rooms were always full of junk and whores and fuck knows what, and policemen and everything. Satirical, you know. We really, well, we had to do something. And what do you do? The pill doesn't wear off when it's time to go. You just go. I used to be up all night with Derek, whether there was anybody there or not. You know, I just couldn't ever sleep. Such a heavy scene it was. Like anybody, like they're all into now, but they didn't call them groupies then, they called it something else. But if you couldn't get groupies, we'd have whores and everything, whatever was going, you know.
Who would arrange for all that stuff?
Derek and Neil, that was their job. And Mal, but I'm not going into all that.
Business and on the convention.
Oh, sure it was. I mean, when we hit town, we hit it, you know. We're no pissing about. But You know, there's photographs of me, God knows, they're crawling about in Amsterdam on my knees, coming out of whorehouses and things like that, and people saying, good morning, John, and all that. And the police escorting me to the places and things like that. You know, because they never wanted a big scandal, you see. I don't really want to talk about it because it hurt Yoko, you know. And it's not fair. But suffice to say, just put it like, you know, they were satirical and on tour. And that's it. Because I don't want to hurt the other people's girls either. It's just not fair. I'm sorry.
I was surprised, you know. I didn't know things like that. I thought, well, John is an artist. And probably he
how did artists live?
Two or three affairs, you know, before getting married, you know. I mean, that's the concept you have in an old school New York artist group, you know, that kind of.
The generation gap.
Right, right, exactly.
George has told Patty by this time.
I don't think so. I don't think they have, you know. You'd have to ask them and say, look.
Let me ask you about something else that was said 100 days ago. At one point, said you and Brian went off to Spain.
Yes.
You must have.
We didn't have an affair.
Never had an affair.
Not an affair.
What is that?
See,
from Brian.
Sim was having a baby, and the holiday was planned, but I wasn't going to break the holiday for a baby. You know, that's how. What a bastard I was! And I just went on holiday, you know, and I watched Brian with picking up the boys, you know. I like playing a bit faggy, you know, and all that, but it's enjoyable. With those big rooms in Liverpool, it was terrible. Very embarrassing. Oh, fuck knows. Yes, yes. I was pretty close to Brian because if somebody's going to manage me, I want to know them, you know, inside out. And the period when he told me he was a fag and all that, I introduced him to pills, you know, which. Gives me a guilt association for his death. I mean, they go that way anyway. And to make him talk, you know, to find out what he's like. And I remember him saying, don't ever throw it back in my face, I'm a fag, which I didn't. But his mother's still hiding that. You know. But what I hate is the way they're all attacking Alan. And Brian was a nice guy, but he knew what he was doing. He robbed us, you know, he fucking took all the money and looked after himself and his family, you know, and all that. And it's just a myth. I hate the way that Alan is attacked and Brian is made like an angel just because he's dead. He wasn't, you know, he was just a guy. Alan would go berserk when he hears all this. Won't he? I think you.
What else was that 100 Days book?
Well, that, I don't know. I can't remember it. Love Me Do was a better book by Michael Brown on the Beatles.
Right.
That was a true book. You know, he wrote How We Were, which was Bastards. You can't be anything else in a situation of such pressurized. And we took it out on people like Neil, Derek, and Mal. Mm-hmm. And that's why, underneath the facade, they resent us, but they can never show it, you know, and they won't believe it when they read it if it's in print, etc. But they took a lot of shit from us because we were in such a shitty position. You know, it was hard work, and somebody had to take it. Those things are left out, you know, about what bastards we were. With, you know, I mean, fucking big bastards. That's what the Beatles were. You have to be a bastard to make it, man, and that's a fact. And the Beatles were the biggest bastards on earth. Like Alan's Christmas card says, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will feel no evil because I'm the biggest bastard in the valley or something. Well, yeah, there's no kidding. If you make it, you're a bastard, you know.
But how did you manage to keep that clean image? It's amazing.
Because everybody wants the image to carry on. The press around with you want to carry on because they want the free drinks and the free whores and the fun. Everybody wants to keep on the bandwagon. It's satirical. And we were the Caesar. Who's going to knock us? When there's £1 million to be made, all the handouts, the bribery of the police, all the fucking hype, you know. Everybody wanted in, you know. Everybody. That's why some of them are still trying to cling on to this. Mm-hmm. Don't take it away from us, you know. Don't take Rome from us. Mm-hmm. Not a portable Rome.
That's true.
Where we all have our houses and our cars and our lovers and our wives and office girls and parties and drink and drugs. Don't take it from us. You know, otherwise you're mad, John. You're crazy, you know. Silly John wants to take all this away.
What do you say to Beatle people today?
When, what you mean, like Beatle fans?
Yeah.
If they, I don't, it depends who they are, you know, I mean, come on. If they say, well, you know, ask me something about Hard Day's Night Health, I just straight with them, say, oh, it was good fun, and or it was like this, because, I mean, I'm giving you the dirt, I mean, there's, a lot of it was great fun, you know. I don't know, I don't meet any Beatle people, do I?
No.
I don't know where they are, you know, in fact, I don't really know how to answer that. There's apples, scruffs, or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what they are, Beatle people or not, I don't know.
If I meet a people, it's something I'd like to get back to, it's really what you say, over.
Well, that's just, I'm saying, like, well, Dylan always said it, you know, don't follow leaders. You know. He said it once.
What was it like in the early days in London when you, you know, first?
When we came down, we were treated like provincials, you know, by the Cockneys.
And what was it like, you know, say, you know, running around
this
discotheque with
a cell? Oh, that was a great period, you know. We were like king of the jungle then, you know. And we were very close to the Stones. So I don't know how close the others were. I spent a lot of time with Brian and Mick, and I admired them, you know. I dug them the first time I saw them in whatever that place is they came from, Richmond Club, you know. And spent a lot of time with them, you know. And it was great, you know, we were kings and we all, you know, just at the prime, and we all used to just go around London in our cars and meet each other and talk about music with the Animals and Eric and all that. And it was really a good time. That was the best period for fame-wise, you know, where we were just, we didn't get mobbed so much as it was, I don't know, it was like a men's smoking club, you know. Just very good scene.
What was Brian like?
Brian Jones. Well, he was different over the years as he disintegrated, you know. I mean, he ended up the kind of guy that you dread. He'd come on the phone, you know, because you knew it was trouble. Or, like that, he was really in a lot of pain, you know. But in the early days, he was all right, you know, because he was young and good-looking, but he's one of them guys that disintegrated in front of you, you know. And he was all right. He wasn't sort of brilliant or anything, you know. He was just a nice guy, you know. And
what did you feel when dying?
By then, I didn't feel anything really. I just thought another victim of the drugs, you know, like that.
What do you think of the Stones today?
I think it's a lot of hype, you know. I think I like Honky Tonk Woman, and I think Mick's a joke, you know, with all that fag dancing and. I always did. I enjoy him, you know. I mean, I'm going to see his films and all that, everybody else. But sort of, really, you know, I think it's a joke. You know.
Do you see him much now?
No, I never do see him. We saw a bit of each other round when Alan was first coming in, you know. I think Mick got jealous, you know, that. I always was very respectful about Mick of the Stones, but he said a lot of sort of tarty things about the Beatles, which I am hurt by, you know, because I can knock the Beatles, but don't let Mick Jagger knock them, you know, because I'd like to just list what we did and what the Stones did 2 months after on every fucking album and every fucking thing we did. Mick does exactly the same. He imitates us. And I'd like one of you fucking underground people to point it out, you know. Let It Bleed. Satanic Majesties is Pepper. We love them, man. It's the most, you know, fucking bullshit. That's all you need is love, you know. They didn't. I resent the implication that the Stones are like revolutionaries and that the Beatles weren't, you know. If the Stones were or are, the Beatles really were. They're not in the same class, music-wise or power-wise. Never were, and Mick always resented it. But I never said anything. I always admired them because I like the funky music and I like their style, you know. I always regretted cutting my hair, you know, a bit like that.
You like rock and roll.
Yeah, I like rock and roll, and I like the direction they took after they got over trying to imitate us, you know. But he's even going to do Apple now. He's going to do the same thing and spend, if it happens, he'll do exactly what we did and lose all his money, you know. But he said some just, he's obviously so upset by how big the Beatles are compared with him, and he never got over it. that he's now in his old age, he's beginning to knock us, you know. And he keeps knocking because now the Beatles have, like, everybody jumped in on the bandwagon to knock Beatles when we split. And from Apple, the Apple facade, you know, that whatever was going on those days, that everybody's been knocking us, you know, and I resent it because even his first, second fucking record we wrote for him, you know.
And Peace Made Money and all that.
Which? Oh, he's saying Peace Made Money. Yeah, we didn't make any money from Peace, you know.
When you, Sergeant Pepper's came out, you must, and you knew, when you finished with Sergeant Pepper's, or, you know, started to put together, mix it or something, I mean, you know, then you knew at that point that this is a great album.
Sergeant Pepper.
Did you feel that while you were making it?
Yeah, yeah. And Rubber Soul, though, too. And Revolver.
What did you... Yeah. What did you think when you... What did you think of the review in the New York Times on Sergeant Pepper?
I don't remember it, you know. Did it panic?
Yeah.
I don't remember. Those days, reviews weren't that important, right, because we had it made, whatever happened. Nowadays, I'm sensitive as shit, you know, and every review counts, you know. But those days, we were too big to touch, you know. So I don't remember the reviews at all. I never read them. And we were so blasé, we never even read the news clippings. I didn't bother with them or read anything about us. It was a bore to read about us. Maybe Brian told us or somebody told us about it, that it was great or blousy. I don't even remember ever hearing about it.
That was the first real anti-Beatles thing in the States.
Yeah. Well, they have been, they've been trying to knock us down since we began, including the British press, always saying, you know, the big joke in crowd with us was, what are you going to do when the bubble bursts? And we told them, you know, privately, and then et cetera, that we'd go when we decided, not when some fickle public decided, you know, because we're not a manufactured group, that we are what we are because we know what we're doing. But, of course, we've made many mistakes and... etc., etc. But we knew instinctively that it would end when we decided, not when the ATV decides to take off our series, anything like that. There was very few things that happened to Beatles that weren't really well thought out by us, whether to do it or not. And, you know, what reaction, and would it last forever? We had an instinct for it, like somebody wrote. Yeah.
What did you...
Could I have a pepper, please?
Yes, pepper.
Yeah. Would you like three, please, then? Yeah.
When you, we were talking about the tour and all, you know, the tours and Terracotta and so on, and everybody was going on, and then somehow the protection stopped that you had. Like George, there's a story about George being at the party at which Mick and Keith were busted. But they let George out.
I don't believe it. He wasn't there. I don't think he was there. Oh, I think it wasn't that they let him out. We were never protected like that. Only on the tours we were protected because everybody was paid off. But then I think, I vaguely remember that George had left, you know. There was a myth around that we were protected by the MBE. I don't know whether it was true, because I still had it when they got me. Had I? When they busted me?
Yes, you did.
Yeah. But I think it's a sort of psycho... See, there's a sort of... There's two ways of thinking, that they're out to get us, or it just happened that way, you know, as a sort of... I think it more or less that... After I started Two Virgins and doing those kind of things, it was like, well, it seemed like I was fair game for the police, you know. Mm-hmm. And... I don't know, I really don't know, you know. There was some myth about us being protected because we had MBE. I don't think it was true, it's just that we never did anything. I mean, the way Paul said the acid thing, I mean, he got a, you know, he did a sort of, I don't know, he never got attacked for it, you know. I don't know if that was protection. Because it was sort of openly admitting that we had drugs. I don't really know about that. I don't think we were ever protected in England. I just think nobody really bothered about us, you know. I think George probably left that party hours before or the day before or something. But you'd have to ask him. Yeah.
Look, I think, Bobby,
oh, yeah.
You have to rest.
Yes, but she's gone.
Why can't you be alone with that young girl?
I can be, but I don't wish to be. No.
Somehow, I remember in Los Angeles when we came down to LA and you went to the kitchen to get something, so I followed, and we stood there. I felt very nervous. You know, I felt that you were very nervous too.
Well, it wouldn't be because I wasn't with that young girl. I'd be the same, just nervous. For what I was nervous, you know, I'm probably in the middle of that therapy. I was busted wide open, you know. I wasn't used to it at all. But I can be alone without you. I just have no wish to be here. There's no reason on earth why I should be alone. There's nothing more important than our relationship. Nothing. And we dig being together all the time, you know. And both of us could survive apart, but what for? No. I'm not going to sacrifice love, real love, for any fucking whore or any friend or any business, because in the end you're alone at night. Neither of us want to be, and you can't fill the bed with groupies. It doesn't work. I don't want to be a swinger, you know. Because it doesn't. Like I said in the song, I've been through it all, and nothing works better than to have somebody you love hold you.
What there was a while in which you hid out in Weybridge and just sat around at home all the time.
Yeah.
And did nothing.
Well, that's what they say. But I wrote a lot of songs, and made some what would be termed far out tapes, you know, which I still have, and made a lot of movies on 8mm. But at the time, I used to think that that was not doing anything, you see. I thought if I wasn't doing sort of Beatle work, this isn't work.
You said at one point you have to write songs that can justify your...
Well, I've said a lot of things. You know, I write songs because that's the thing I chose to do, you know. And I can't help writing them. That's the fact. And sometimes I feel as though you work to just... I felt as though you work to justify your existence, but you don't. You work to exist. And that's it, really.
What do you think of your art?
I don't know how you mean. What in what terms?
You say you write songs because you can't help it.
Yeah, I mean, creating is a result of pain too. Mm-hmm. I have to put it somewhere, and I write songs, you know. But that hiding in Weybridge, I used to think I wasn't working, but I made 20 or 30 movies, or, you know, on just 8mm stuff, but they're still movies. And many, many hours of tape of different sounds, you know, just not rocking. Just, would call them avant-garde, I suppose. That's how Yoko met. There was very few people I could play those tapes to, and I played them to it, and then we made Two Virgins. The a few hours later.
What did Cynthia say? What she
I don't remember, you know. At the time I was making Two Virgins, she was away on holiday. Both our respective spouses were on holiday when we got together, you know. And that was it. I don't know. I didn't communicate with her.
What happened to Tony Palmer's
body? We stopped it. Because I don't want to misquote it, because he'll sort of get upset, but it was just bullshit. So we made a mistake doing it. We take on too much, that's the problem.
How are you going to avoid going overboard on things again?
I think I'll be able to control myself, and not control is the wrong word, but I just won't get involved in too many things, that's all. Yeah. I think. You know, I don't know. I'll just do whatever happens. There's more, you know, it's silly to feel guilty that I'm not working or not doing this it's you know, I have to, it's just stupid. I'm just going to do what I want for myself. I mean, for both of us.
What happened to Magic Alex?
I don't know. He's still in London. No.
Did you all really think that he had these inventions?
I think some of his stuff actually has come true. I'll check it with Alan, but they just haven't manufactured. Maybe one of the whole myths, you know, is a saleable object. He was just another guy, you know, that comes and goes like around people like us, you know.
You say
he's all right, but he's cracked, you know. He means well.
You say in the record, the freaks on the phone won't leave me alone.
Yeah.
Don't give me that brother.
Yeah. Because I'm sick of all these aggressive hippies or whatever they are, you know, the now generation, sort of being very uptight with me, you know, just either on the street or anywhere on the phone, or demanding my attention as if I owe them something, you know. I'm not their fucking parents, you know, that's what it is. They come to the door with a fucking peace symbol and expect to just sort of march around the house or something, like an old Beatle fan. They're under a delusion of awareness by having long hair. And that's what I'm sick of. I'm sick of them, they frighten me, you know. There's a lot of uptight maniacs going around wearing fucking peace symbols.
What did you think of Manson when that thing happened?
I don't know what I thought when it happened. I just think a lot of the things he says are true. That he's a child of the state, made by us. And he took their children in when nobody else would, is what he did. But of course he's cracked, all right.
But what was Helter Skelter?
Well, he's balmy, he's like any other Beatle kind of fan who reads mysticism into it. I mean, we used to have a laugh putting this, that, and the other in a light-hearted way, that some intellectual would read as some symbolic youth generation what's it. But we also took seriously some part of the role, you know. But, I mean, I don't know, what's Helter Skelter got to do with knifing somebody? You know, I'd never listened to the words properly of Helter Skelter. It was just a sort of a noise, you know.
Everybody spoke about the playing backwards things on Abbey Road.
Well, that's bullshit. I just read one about Dylan, too, that he sings No Tin, and it means, I don't believe it, it's bullshit.
Yeah, I'm used to read that.
Yeah, I know, but it'll start it all off. Was it yoga?
Right, no, it's just because that's the end of it. You know, I don't think anything. Were there any other on the rumor about Paul being dead?
We've been through all this one before, haven't we?
That's a rumor?
About Paul being dead? I don't know where that started. That was balmy, you know.
Why?
I don't know where it was. I don't know. You know as much about it as me.
Were any of those things that on the album that they said were on the album?
Which, name a few.
List of clues or...
No, that was bullshit. The whole thing was made up.
No real church put that out.
No, not, we never put anything like that. We put like tit, tit, tit in girl. And just, I don't remember. You know. It would be things like a beat missing or something like that. See if anybody noticed. Think more things like that, you know. I don't remember any. I know we used to have a few things, but nothing that could be interpreted like that.
Why do you think something like that whole death thing would happen?
Because people have got nothing better to do than study Bibles and make myths about it and study, you know, rocks and make stories about how people used to live and all that. You know, it's just something to do for them. They live vicariously.